Today's show is brought to you by Bruce Fine Construction. If you can't find the house to buy, maybe it's time to build your house. Bruce built my home, and I know he can build your home too. Check him out today at brucefineconstruction.com or call at 570-362-1185. This episode is brought to you today by Whitehall Mortgage. Where there's a will, there's a Whitehall. Buying a home starts by getting a pre-approval, and nobody does it better than Doug in Dallas. Call them today at 570-562-7505 or apply online at whitehallmortgagefinancial.com. Hey everybody, I'm Dave Whitechalk. I'm the host of the Real Estate Right Now podcast, but today we're here at the Downtown Real Estate Academy. I'm not only a podcast host and a real estate broker, I'm actually the owner and the director of this school. And today what you're gonna see on our next few episodes here is our pre-licensing students going through a class, and we're gonna talk a little bit about what it is that I do as a teacher. And it's a great look at people who are interested in starting a career in real estate, which I know there's a lot of you out there. Hopefully this will answer a bunch of questions for you. Full-time real estate, selling houses. I mean, like this is all I do. I support my family, my lifestyle, everything from real estate. So I think if you want to do that, you owe it to yourself and you owe it to the people that you're in a relationship, pursuing a relationship. You got to tell people what this job is. And you have to have a real conversation about that with people. Like, I know I told you guys, when I went on my own and said, I'm going to pursue real estate full time, I talked to my wife and I said, 6 months. I don't want to hear a word for 6 months. And if I screw it up, I'll quit. You don't have to tell me. I'll know I suck. I'll quit. I'll go do something else. But I wanted 6 months. You know, the flip side of that is, ideally, if you get really good at this job, it does encompass a lot of your time. All right? And that's a conversation that you're going to have if you're married, if you got a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or if you plan on getting married or whatever it may be. You have to have the understanding of those people. All right, today, before I got to class, I actually counted on this because I wanted to see what it was. Just today, from the time I woke up until 5:30 before this class started, I had 28 separate text streams today. 28. I didn't send 28 text messages. I had 28 separate conversations from the time I got up today until 5:30. 28 different people or groups of people. How many messages was that all together? I don't know, like 400 probably. Today. All right? I answered my phone today. All right, from the time I got up till 5:30 before class started, I answered my phone 23 times. All right? I want you to think about what that looks like. Think about that. You don't have to tell me a number, but open up your phone and tell me how many different people you communicated with through text message today, and tell me how many times you answered your cell phone today. And I'm going to guess most of you guys, it's probably less than that.
One.
There you go. Yeah, right?
One.
Yeah. So here's the thing. When you get cranking in this business, those days are over. All right? And the people that you're going to be with, they have to understand that. Like, and that's like a personal thing. Like, I don't want to tell you guys how to live your life, but like, you have to understand what you're doing. You have to understand what this job is. You know, people will say to me all the time, hey, you know, I really want to see this house, but you know, especially now, because next week at 5 o'clock, it's dark. 5 o'clock next week, it's dark. So people say, hey, you know, can I see how, I can only see him on a Saturday though. Is that okay? I'm like, yeah, in my business, Saturday and Sunday are other people's Monday and Tuesday. Right? Because if you're working with someone that wants to buy a house this time of year, they probably have a job. Probably, right? Most people work day shift. Right? 8 to 4, 7 to 3, whatever it may be. Well, in Northeastern Pennsylvania, November, December, January, and February, it's dark at 5 o'clock. Sooner,
December, it's dark at 4:30. So do you want to go see houses in the dark? I mean, I advise against it. So what does that mean? You got to see them during the day. Well, if they work Monday through Friday, when are you showing houses? Saturday and Sunday. So if you're someone who's living for the weekend, it's over in this business. Right? Like, you got to work on Saturdays or Sundays in this business. You have to.
I read the most offers on Sundays and Monday mornings.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's the nature of our business. And what does that mean? It means, look, sometimes my wife, and I love my wife, and she's great, and she's supportive, and she does a great job with everything that I ask her to do. But there are times when I'm 1,000% sure she probably hates being married to me. But it's part of the deal. It's just part of the deal, right? You're sitting at dinner and you're waiting on a call and it's important and you got to and the phone rings and you go, look, I got to take this. I have to. Because it could make a difference of whether I get a deal or not. Now look, a lot of things can wait. In fact, most things can wait. But some can't. They just can't. And when things can't wait, you pick up the phone. And it doesn't matter if you're having dinner, if you're out to dinner. Do you know how many times I've answered my phone and I'm out to dinner with my family or friends and I go, I'm sorry, I gotta take this, and I walk out away from the table, sometimes mid-conversation? It's going to happen, right? Sometimes I'll get the call, she goes, you know, how come when I call, my wife will hit me with it, how come when I call you don't answer the phone, but when other people call you do? I say, well, because if it was super important, I'm married to you. We've been together for over two decades. If it's super important, you know to text me, number one. And number two, if you're calling me without a text message, I'm assuming it's important, but maybe not super important. And that's kind of the direction that it's gone. Like if she texts me, hey, answer your phone, it's about the kids, I'm on the phone. Right? That's how it goes. But if she's just calling me, like my wife, every time I'm on my wife's way home from work, she calls me every day, 4:05. Because that's where she works. They don't have cell phone reception. I think they teach in a cave. I'm not sure how it works. But they don't have cell phone reception. Yeah, it's not bad, right? So soon as she gets essentially to Route 11, that's where she gets cell phone reception. My phone rings at 4:05 every day. Every day. So if I'm in the middle of something that's really important and I see she's calling me at 4:05, sometimes I don't answer. That's how it goes. So, but you have to be open and honest about that with people that matter to you in your life. Because if you're not, it's going to cause conflict. This job, the nature of it, can cause conflict if you're not honest about what it entails. You know, we were in this summer for our 16th anniversary. We were in Grenada. Honestly, one of the most beautiful islands I've ever been on in my life. And the beach that we were at, I like the Caribbean. It's what I like. We like going there. That beach, honestly, the view from the beach where we were staying was the nicest view I've ever seen anywhere in my life. 45 years old, fair amount of traveling, most beautiful beach I've ever seen. I don't even know how many text messages and phone calls I made on that trip. By the way, just her and I, the kids were staying with family, just the two of us, and I'm making calls, and I'm answering the phone, and I'm sending emails and text messages and whatever it may be on that vacation. Because sometimes I have to do it, especially as a broker, right? Because I might have an agent who only sells 3 or 4 houses a year. And they might have a closing on Wednesday and it's Tuesday and I'm in Grenada on the beach and this agent's calling me. I know what the call's about. It's about the deal that's supposed to happen tomorrow, and apparently there's some problem. I have to answer that phone. Because if I don't, it's going to cause a problem that I could alleviate maybe just talking on the phone. And when I look at it in the big picture, you know, we sell 400 houses a year. That's one deal. In the big picture, it's not really important to me. But it's everything to them. Right? So when I see that, I have no choice. I have to answer. This job will do that to you. You'll be answering your phone. You'll be sending text messages. You know, my wife will look at me. It's so funny. I'll be sending a text message. You know, it'll be 9:30 at night. My wife goes, who are you texting? Doug Pinnell? The lender? Yeah. It's really important. I got to talk to him. I have no choice. His wife's probably yelling at him for doing the same thing. Right? Who are you texting at 9:30? The lender? You know, it's like that State Farm commercial. Who are you talking to? Jake from State Farm? You know, like, you're going to have that. It's going to happen. So you got to tell people in your life that matter to you what this job entails. And it's serious, and you got to be okay with it. Listen, I'm telling you, sending text messages at my daughter's dance competitions, in between dances, right? When does she dance? She dances at 12:20, and then she dances again at 12:45. All right, 3 minutes to dance. I have 17 minutes to send a message. And you're banging it, because you know you got to be at that next one. Like, that's the reality of this job. Unfortunately, even if you're a part-timer, you can be part-time in the amount of time you spend pursuing the job. But when you have a deal, you're in that deal full-time. Because it's the same exact thing. My second text message this morning, all right? And I'm going to go look what it is. I think I remember what it was. I don't remember the time. I have a closing coming up on Wednesday. I have people who are selling a house, and they're also buying a house. They're doing both. All right. So we're 48 hours away from that closing. I've already got one nailed down, and the other one's a mess. We're going to send up a prayer and hope that it goes well. At 8:31 a.m., 8:31 on Monday morning. Hey, Dave, when are those closings on Wednesday? I gotta answer. Hey, I'm on it. You'll have the information later today, right? What I really want to say is I have 37 other things I got to get done before I worry about those two closings. Because it's gotten to the point where, like, my part of the job is done. Now it comes down to title and lending, and they got to pull it together. But that's another thing you got to remember. You're the face of the transaction, for better or worse. When things are going bad, you get all the blame. When things are going good, you get all the credit sometimes too. So it goes both ways. But remember, especially if you're working with buyers, sellers too, but like if you're working with a client with their house, you know, you're working with a buyer. My last closing with my last buyers, I worked with them for 4 months until they got a house under contract. 4 months. Like, you get to know people. It almost feels weird once they buy to not call them because you're talking to them so much. They may never meet their lender face to face. So if a problem comes up with their loan, who's probably going to hear about it? You are. Because they know you. They don't really know the lender. You know, they know there's a title company, and they're going to come in and they're going to do the closing. Usually the first time they see those people is at the closing. Yeah. Did you even meet the person? Right? So you don't even meet the person that's doing the closing. You're just like, all right, you show up, you sign a bunch of papers, and then they give you a key. That's how people think. So as a realtor, you got to wear a lot of hats. You get a lot of credit, you get a lot of blame. But you have to be honest and open with the people in your life about what this job means. It's going to mean sending text messages at 9:30 at night when you're sitting there watching a TV show, right? Sometimes my wife gives me little quizzes. I hate them. I never do good. What did they just say? I'm like, I don't know. Something about something. I don't know. Because I don't know everything they said, right? Because I'm doing something. She goes, do you have to do that right now? Yes. Right? Like, I had a conversation today with my wife. I'm like, I cannot do this now. And I hung up the phone.
That's not smart.
Not great. Yeah, it wasn't great. So I know tonight when I go home, I know factually, right? I go home from class, right? When I get home, I hug my kids, they go to bed. That's the only time I see my kids today, other than when I took them to school in the morning. So I go home, I see my kids, good night, see you in the morning, boom, done. I know factually, the first question, my wife, you couldn't talk to me? And you know what I'm gonna say to her? No, not then, I couldn't. I had other stuff, it's more important, right? Well, what's more important than talking to me? A lot of things, sometimes. Now I don't, like, right? And it's like, that's weird when you say that, right? What's more important than talking to me? A lot of things, right? Because I know what you're gonna tell me. Oh, this one kid, he didn't do his homework. Can you believe it? Again, ooh, what a kid. And I know it's super annoying to her, and I know sometimes she's just gotta tell me because it gets it off her, makes her feel better, and I wanna be that person, right? I wanna be the person that she says that to. Like, I don't want it to be like the weird art teacher, right? You know how that goes, right? So I don't want that, so I want her to tell me. But sometimes it can't be when she wants to. And does that cause some conflict? You bet. Right? But that's the business. Right? Circling back around, bottom of page 186, licensure activities and procedures. Actually, we'll go right to the top of 187, first paragraph on the top of 187. At present, the Department of State may issue 10 separate licenses. Individuals must possess a reputation for honesty, trustworthiness, integrity, and competence. Allegedly. No, I'm kidding. In addition to meeting the requirements for specific licenses, including appropriate fees, applicants must provide details of a conviction, so on and so forth. Now, what are the licenses that are out there? Number one, the broker. What's a broker? Section 201 of RELRA and 35201 of the regulations define a broker as an individual or entity who, for another and for a fee, commission, or other valuable consideration, performs one of the following acts: negotiates or aids with the person locating or obtaining for purchase, lease, or acquisition any interest in real estate. Same thing as far as listings. Someone who manages real estate, acts as a consultant. So there you see your bullet points, everything a broker does. What are the requirements to be a broker? These are things that you're gonna have to know. These are all little test questions. All these different licenses and what the requirements are. They will ask you that. So to be a broker, you gotta be at least 21 years old. Some people in this class wouldn't qualify based on age. I think that's great, actually. Everyone who I've ever met that's been successful in real estate, they all say the same thing, and that's, I wish I started sooner. So if you're out there in your 20s, some of you are in your teens, excellent. You're ahead of the game. That's a good thing, all right? But to be a broker, you gotta be at least 21. You have to be a high school graduate or equivalent, 240 hours, 16 credits of real estate instruction. Currently, we do not offer broker courses here, but it is something that we will be adding in 2025. Have been engaged as a licensee, as a licensed real estate salesperson for at least 3 years, or have experience and or education that the commission considers equivalent. The commission uses a point system as a guide for evaluating the experience of an applicant. So what does that point system look like? In order to get your broker's license, you need 200 points. Sounds like a lot. Each time you represent someone in a sale, it's worth 5 points. I don't know why. All right? So if you only do sales, in order to get your broker's license, you have to be at least 21, an agent for at least 3 years, and you had to have represented at least 40 clients in the sale of their home. It's 40 times 5 is 200. That gives you your points required. If you take part in 40 sales, is that enough to be a broker? According to the state of Pennsylvania, yes. According to real life, I'm not so sure. I think you might need a little bit more experience than that. The best agents in the business sell more than 40 houses in a year. So is it possible to get 40 sales in 3 years? 100%. I mean, some of you could do it in a year. All right? Pass both portions of a written exam within 3 years of the date the license application. So to get your salesperson's license, you have to pass a state and national exam. You have to pass a similar state and national exam to get your broker's license as well. Don't throw away your book. It's shocking how similar these exams are. All right, so hold on to this one. This is the 14th edition. I think mine was the 12th. Changes a little bit as the rules change, right? But it's a great reference. If you're planning on becoming a broker in the future, if a new edition comes out, buy it. It's like $55, roughly, to buy one of these. And then you have to pay to ship them, which I think is unfair. Another story for another day. All right. Now, submit a written application, including the name and address under which the applicant will do business, and recommendations attesting to the applicant's reputation for honesty, trustworthiness, integrity, and competence. So that's what you need to be a broker. Now, there's a broker of record. Well, what's a broker of record? The regulations define the broker of record as the individual broker responsible for the real estate transactions of a partnership, association, or corporation licensed as a broker. So the name of my company is the broker. I am the broker of record for my company. Does that make sense? So the broker is the company. I am the broker of record for that company. Does that make sense? So that's how it works, all right? So what does a broker of record do? First things first, only one individual may be recognized as the broker of record regardless of the number of offices the firm operates. The broker of record is also known as the employing broker. They will use those terms interchangeably on the exam, and you'll be expected to know them. So the broker of record and the employing broker, same person. If you have multiple offices, sometimes, you know, in my company, someone says, well, do I work out of this office or that office or that? There is none, right? Like the way we have it set up, every one of my offices has a lockbox out in front of it. All the agents know the code. If they need to work from there, they can. So what office do you work out of? The one that's most convenient for you. That's how we do it. All right? I think a lot of places do it similar. Some might do it differently. That's fine. Those are the types of questions you should be asking the employing broker when you have your interview with them. Hey, how does this work? How many offices do you have? Can I work out of all of them? How do I get in? Like, those are reasonable questions to ask, right? If you're like me, I have a home office. Sometimes I can't work there. Too many distractions in my life, right? Too many distractions. Me personally, like the office that I work from is walking distance from my house. I go there every day. I need to be at work sometimes to work, right? Because I'm at home. And then I'm like, I hear a noise. I'm like, was that the AC? Does it sound like that? Is it broken? I gotta go check that out. right? Yeah. Yeah, right. It just happens like that, right? You're like, ooh, is that the pool filter that kicked on? What time is it? Yeah. Oh, is it supposed to be on now? Right? Oh, man, I have to buy eggs. I should probably go to the grocery store now.
Yeah.
Right? And then you go to the grocery store and you're like, damn, I don't have gas. Right? And that's what happens, right? Like, if you're trying to do it from home, you just go down that rabbit hole. And before you know it, you're like, what the heck? Right? I'm at the grocery store. Oh, now I need gas. Oh, well, I'm pumping gas. Oh, look at that. Hey, I didn't see that video. And you're on your phone. And the next thing you know, you're like, I'm going to watch this video. Oh, look at that next video. And the next thing you know, you're like, I just spent 72 minutes on Instagram. Does it happen? Every day. So for me to be super efficient, I have to leave my house, go to work, sit at a desk there that is not as nice as the desk I have at my house. But I get stuff done there because I'm at work. That's what works for me. I have agents that the only time they come into my office is the days they get paid. Totally fine with that. Some agents come almost daily. Totally fine with that too. Do what works for you. But that's a question that you should be asking your broker in the or your prospective broker. Hey, how does it work here? Can I come here whenever I want? Do I have a desk to sit at and work? Can I work in the conference room if no one's there? Is there a conference room here? Can we have closings here? Like, good questions to ask, things to know about. Hey, would you mind actually like just showing me around? You'd be shocked how many people go to work someplace they've never been in the building. Bananas, right? So those are things that you have to know. The office that I worked at prior to opening up my own brokerage, there was no conference room. So we could never have a closing at the office.
So where did you have it?
Usually at the title companies, which I hated because you were always at a different place depending on who people wanted to use. Hated it. It wasn't super convenient. I didn't like it. I didn't know that that was a question. When I didn't know to ask. I didn't know how people did it. And then I thought everybody did it that way. And then I found out that not everybody does it that way. And I'm like, man, I wish I knew that. Right? But nobody tells you these things. But I'm telling you so that you'll know to ask. And be honest about what's important to you. If you can't get work done at your house, you better go work at a brokerage that has office space. Not all of them do. If you're someone that doesn't need office space, well, that's not super important to you. But you better know a little bit about yourself, about who you are as a person. I have to be at work. It benefits me greatly to be at work, to get work done. I'm too distracted, right? But when I'm working, I'm working. The flip side of that is sometimes I my admin will tell me, hey, it's 2:00. I'm like, okay. Because sometimes if I get in the middle of something, I'll just crank it out. And I'm like, hey, don't forget to tell me. Like, it was a big thing. I used to pick up my kids from school. Now they're in middle school, so they want to take the bus home. I still drop them off in the morning, but they want to take the bus home. I can't tell you how many times my admin has had to tell me, hey, unless you plan on flying to the school, you better leave now. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to go get, you know, all right? Or my kid's waiting there. And then she's giving you that look. And by the way, I don't know if you have kids, they will tell on you so fast. Dad was late. Dad was late. Supposed to be here at 3:20, came here at 3:22. He was late. I was the last kid picked up. I'm like, I drove by the other kids in the parking lot. I wasn't that late, right? Kids will tell on you fast, right? But you have to be honest about how it works. This is interesting. Within 15 days of death or incapacity of the broker of record, an authorized party must notify the commission and appoint another qualified person to serve as the broker or broker of record. You know, I kind of joke around. You guys did meet Annie, one of the other teachers here. I say, if I died tomorrow, Annie would run White Chalk Real Estate. It's kind of a joke, also kind of serious. You never know, right? Like, but there's literally a plan in place in case that happens. It happened here somewhat recently, a couple years ago, a broker of record passed away. Another broker in the area had to step in and close out the business for them. So it does happen. I mean, I think right now, the last time the commission did a check on this, like the average age of a broker of record in Pennsylvania is like 67 years old. Now, I'd argue that's not that old, but remember, that's the average age. There's a lot of brokers out there in their 70s or 80s. And you never know, right? Yeah. Listen, I remember I was a realtor when I started back in 2012. I was working for about 6 months at the time. I primarily had worked with investors. That's how I got started. But I got my first really good client. They're going to buy a house in a nice neighborhood. And I'm taking them and I'm going to show them a house, $350,000. Same house today would probably sell for $700,000. But this house is $350,000. It was at that particular time the most expensive house I had ever shown. And it was listed by a broker in the town that I live and work in. And he'd been in the business, I'm not exaggerating, over 50 years. So I was, you know, I'm a new agent. To be honest, I was kind of nervous. I mean, I was used to selling investment properties, going into foreclosures, right? You don't wear nice clothes when you're showing $32,000 houses with God only knows what on the carpet, right? Garbage, bugs. I mean, I've been in houses before where I'm like, I have to leave, I have fleas on me. Like that happens sometimes, right? Or investment properties that are just in deplorable condition. You know, you don't have to get super dressed up for that. This was the most expensive house I ever showed in my life at the particular time. And it was listed by a guy who'd been a broker for 50 years. Literally everyone in the town knew him. So I'm like, I call, I set the appointment. He goes, I said, is there a lockbox? He goes, I'll meet you there. So now I'm literally even more nervous. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I told my wife, I was very excited. I'm showing this property. She goes, what are you going to do? I don't know. I never met this guy before, but I know him. Everybody knows him. So I showed up. I was wearing a suit. I was nervous. I didn't know what to do. So I wore a suit, right? So I show up. The guy's there. He's 107. I don't know. He wasn't that old, but to me, right? Look, he was old, right? So sure enough, he does meet me there. And I get out and I walk to the door. He goes, you going to a wedding? I said, no. He goes, huh, nice suit. I'm like, great. You know what I mean? So now he's making fun of me. So he opens the door to this house, all right? And I'm ready. I'm like, all right, I'm going to follow this guy. I'm going to see what he does. I'm going to try to do what he does, right? Makes sense. He's getting these type of listings. He's showing up. I'm going to do everything he does. Goes to the house, opens the door, swings the door open, walks inside, and there was a sitting room on the right-hand side as soon as you opened up the door. He walked into the house, took three steps, sat in a chair, and said, go ahead. That was it. I go, do you want to show us around? He goes, nah, I can't do the steps anymore. I'm like, all right. So here I am in my suit showing this house, right? We're getting ready to leave. I said, hey, you know, we're good. He goes, all right. He goes, give me a minute here. He goes, you can go. He goes, I'll lock it up. I don't know if you could have got out of the chair. I'm being honest. I was like, I didn't know what to, like, need help. Like, I don't, like, I'm like, all right. So just like leave. Yeah, you're good. You good? Yeah, I'm good. Okie doke. It's kind of left. It was so awkward and weird. Right? But like, that's the business. There's a lot of realtors out there that sell into an advanced age, right? So it's part of it, right? So there's plans in case that happens. I mean, and again, it happened here locally. Now, you can also be an associate broker. There's a lot of those out there. An associate broker is an individual who has met the broker license requirements, but who is employed by a broker of record. Associate brokers may not employ other licensees or engage in the real estate business in their own name or from their own place of business. An associate broker's license is required to manage a branch office on behalf of a licensed broker of record. So I tell people this all the time. If you get your real estate license, you should get your broker's license. Eventually, I think it's a good goal for everyone. There's a ton of designations. We talked about this. CRS, all these different initials, right? And you're like, nobody really knows what they stand for. I'm a certified residential specialist. People are like, oh, they don't have a clue what that means, right? I'm an E-Pro. Great. No one has a clue what that means. But if you say, hey, I'm a broker, people actually know what that means. Oh, do you have your own place? No, I'm an associate broker. So I have my broker's license, but I work at another brokerage. We currently have a few in my company. Some companies have tons. You know, here in northeastern Pennsylvania, you know, a lot would be, I mean, some have 20, 30 plus associate brokers, which is more than some companies even have licensees. But I mean, if you go to like big cities, it's common for an office to maybe have hundreds of associate brokers. It's okay. Now, if you want to manage an office, a branch office, you need your associate broker's license. But some people get their broker's license. I say, you should get your broker's license. They go, Dave, I don't want to own my own place. You don't have to. Just get your broker's license and work as an associate broker underneath a broker of record. If you're happy where you are, stay there. Maybe you want to form a team, right? Maybe you want to run a branch office. Maybe you just want to have that license so you can tell people, hey, I'm a broker too. It is, in my opinion, generally speaking, probably the most respected license you can hold other than being a broker of record. If you say, hey, I'm an associate broker, it does elevate your status, in my opinion. If you tell me that you're a certified negotiations expert, one, I don't believe you. Whoa, what do you mean? Look, if you're great at negotiating, you don't have to take a class on how to do it. Just my opinion. Some of the best negotiators I know, right? You don't have to take a class. You know who's an expert negotiator? Kids. They are literally the best. Hey, can I have a sleepover at grandma's house this weekend? You know, I know you and mom, you know, I know you're going out with your friends on Saturday, so maybe we could just sleep over grandma's. You're like, man, that sounds like a good idea. But deep down, they're like, this is great. I could eat whatever I want. I get to stay on my phone till 3 a.m. because grandma falls asleep. Right? And they ain't flying to my house, right? Hey, I'm just saying, if you and mom are going out, you want to have a good time, go ahead, have fun. Can we stay at grandma's? You're like, yeah. Yeah, it's a great idea. Call grandma, see if it's, I already did. She said it's fine, it's up to you. I'm just, you know, just saying. You're like, man, this kid is sharp. And then something happens, you become an adult, you forget how to negotiate like that. Negotiation is something that's like, it's normal, it's conversational, right? Hey, does this make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. Well, what would? This would. All right, and then go back. People get tied up in that sometimes. I'm gonna be an expert negotiator. Awesome. I wanna be a deal maker. No one's ever truly happy, rarely, in a sale. Buyers wanted a little bit more, sellers wanted a little bit more. Well, you gotta make it work. What works? And at the end of the day, eyes on the prize. What's the ultimate goal? And if you can get there, it works. What's a great negotiation? A deal that closes. It's a great negotiation. Because you had a seller who wanted to sell, you had a buyer who wanted to buy, both of them accomplished that goal. Good negotiation, right? So like, sometimes people get these designations, nobody knows what they mean. And I'm not saying they're not important. Again, anytime you can educate yourself, I think it's worth it. Some are more worth it. I think the associate broker is probably one of the best licenses to pursue. Literally same thing. 14 hours of continuing education and so on and so forth. Right? Same rules apply as far as that goes. So it's no extra work per se. Where does the extra work come in if you decide to open up your own place? Then it's a lot of work.
When you renew like your broker license, you don't need to renew your regular license?
Well, once So for instance, when I became a broker and I opened up my own place, so I technically, there's two licenses. I have an RB license, which is the brokerage, and I have an RM license, which is me personally, right? So when I got my RM license, my RS, real estate salesperson, became inactive. So once I become an RM, the RS goes away. So I don't have to keep multiple licenses open because the RM functions the same as the RS under the RB, right? So broker, broker of record, salespeople or associate brokers slot in under. So that's how it works. So I have to renew two licenses for the sales, my RB and my RM. Now, as an agent, you have to renew your license the last day of May of every even year. But for the school, I have no earthly clue why this is, but I have to renew my license by Halloween every year. Not only my license, but all of the teachers who also teach here at the school, because they will have an RS, real estate salesperson's license. They'll also have an RI license, real estate instructor. So I have to renew the school, my RI, all my instructors' RIs, and every single individual class I teach. So real estate practice, real estate fundamentals, all my continuing ed, all my broker's courses, all need to be renewed every single year by Halloween. It's expensive. It's one of the most expensive things I pay is renewing licenses and MLS dues. Just licenses and dues last year alone, I don't know, I think I spent $7,000 or $8,000.
But the individuals don't pay anything towards it? Your employees or?
Towards what I'm doing? Okay. Nothing. Yeah, they have their own license, their RS, they have to renew it. And that's actually a really great question, right? So in order to be a licensed agent, it costs you roughly $1,000 a year, a little more than $1,000 a year. So what does that look like? Well, if you join, you know, we're in Luzerne County, I would assume many of you will join Luzerne County, some of you may not, and it'll be different wherever you are, but in Luzerne County, when you join, it costs you roughly $500 a year. Because when you join Luzerne County, they make you join PAR, Pennsylvania Association of Realtors, and NAR, the National Association of Realtors. So when you join the Luzerne County MLS, you'll be a member of LCAR, PAR, and NAR. It's about $500 a year to do that. Then the MLS system that we use, Flex MLS, it's $45 a month to stay active on the MLS. 45 times 12, $540. Plus the five, I think this year it was 516. So it's cost you $1,100 to be a realtor this year in Luzerne County. Every time you list a house on the MLS in Luzerne County, $9. Some brokerages will pass that on to each individual agent. Some don't. Good question to ask. Hey, what fees do I have to pay here? Well, you have to join, you know, it's fine, okay, fine. And then you have to pay your MLS fees, okay, fine. Anything else? Yes, there's also this, and this. Or, no, that's it. That's all you have to pay. You gotta know. Because
some do per transaction,
100%. 100%. I mean, it gets cumbersome sometimes knowing the different fees and stuff that you'll have to pay. But if you work at a place with minimal to no fees, it's going to cost you roughly $1,100 a year to work out of Luzerne County. Now, if you work in other MLS systems with Bright or whatever it is, Bright has their own fees. Sometimes you could join multiple MLSs if you want the access. You could do that as well. Now, here's the license that you all want and you'll all have, the salesperson's license. Section 201 of RELRA and 35201 of the regulations define a salesperson who is employed by a licensed broker of record and they do one or more of the following things. Sell or offer to sell real estate, buy or offer to buy, negotiate the price, negotiate a loan,
lease or rent, collect or offer to collect rent, assist the broker in managing properties, perform a CMA, comparative market analysis. So what exactly can you do when you become a realtor? You'll all get your RS license. Congratulations. What does that give you the ability to do? You can now work with a buyer to purchase a home. You can now work with a seller to help them sell their home. You can work under a broker to manage property. You can help someone rent out an apartment that they have. You can help a tenant find a suitable apartment to rent. Those are probably the big ones that you do as a real estate licensee, a salesperson. Most of your money will be made assisting buyers and sellers to buy and sell. Unit 22 in the book is all about property management. All right? If you want to manage properties, you can do so with a real estate salesperson's license if you work at a brokerage that does property management. Where I worked prior to starting my own company, we did property management there. My particular company that I'm the broker of record at, we do not do property management. So if that's something that you want to do, make sure you go work someplace that does property management. Because if you want to do property management, but your brokerage doesn't do it, you can't do it. So you can make money managing property. So then why don't you do it? Personal choice. There's a lot of ways to make money in this business. At the end of the day, in my opinion, I think the best way to make money is by helping buyers buy and helping sellers sell. Can you make money in property management? Absolutely. I've made the determination it's not worth the headache, the costs, or the trouble, so I don't do it. So any of the people who work at my brokerage, they cannot do property management. Just how it goes. Now, what if you have your own rental properties? Well, if they're yours, of course you can, right? But you can't manage for other people. All right? Property management's interesting, and we'll talk about that when we do Unit 22. I could remember many, many times managing properties, cutting grass because the owners are going to get fined if the grass isn't cut, shoveling snow, putting down rock salt, frozen pipes in the winter, standing in basements with blow dryers on copper pipes so they won't freeze and bust. And then I'm down there and I'm doing that. I'm going like, this is why I went to real estate school. Like I'm standing in a basement, it's 29 degrees, and I've got a blow dryer stuck onto a copper pipe. I'm starting to regret my life choices. Now, what activities? We already talked about that. The activities for which a salesperson is licensed are performed under the supervision and responsibility, ultimately, of the employing broker. Employment is defined in the act to include independent contractors. Everyone who works at my brokerage is an independent contractor, meaning they get a 1099, not a W-2. They are not employees. All right? Now, last paragraph, it says, a salesperson must be at least 18 years old. Everybody qualifies, that's good. They must complete 75 hours of real estate as prescribed by the commission and pass both portions of the examination prior to being issued a license. As of 2018, applicants for licensure as a real estate salesperson are now required to hold a high school diploma, a GED, or equivalent. So you don't even have to be a high school graduate. If you have a GED, you can be a real estate salesperson. One thing I do love about real estate, it is very much a show me business, right? It's why sometimes people, when they come in to interview with me, they bring a resume. I think it's a nice touch. I almost never read them. I don't care what you did. I want to know what you can do. Does that make sense? So when I was in high school, I was on the Honor Society. Awesome. Do you know a bunch of people? Because that's probably more important than being in the Honor Society. Right? Well, when I was in college, I was on the soccer team. Excellent. Do you still talk to all those people? Are they at the age where they're thinking about buying or selling houses? It's so funny. I hear people say it all the time. Well, you know, it's not who you know, it's what you know that matters. Not necessarily. Not in real estate. Real estate literally is who you know. The more people you know, the more people you talk to, the more people you are friends with, the more people that trust you, the better you'll do in this business. So you can have just the high school diploma, just the GED, and be an outstanding realtor. You can have master's degrees, doctorate degrees, and if you can't talk to people and you're socially awkward, you're probably going to struggle. Right? Not always. Some introverts out there make great realtors. Usually because they're wildly detail-oriented. That's where they win. Because we're going to talk about this. Here's an idea. Here's something I can guarantee you I know the right answer to. All right? I guarantee you I'm right about this. 100% sure. And I want you to make a determination. I want you to pick an answer, what you think is right, and I'll let you know if you're right or wrong. And I guarantee you I'm right. What is the number one way to communicate with your clients in real estate? Think about it. What's the number one way? All right, so how do you communicate? Speaking, calling, texting, emailing, Messenger, Snapchat, I don't know, face to face. Think about it. What is the number one way? If you have a client, all right, you got your real estate license, way to go. You got someone who says, yeah, I want to buy a house. Excellent. You get them pre-approved. Great. What's the number one way to communicate with that person? Think about it. Who says text message? Phone call? Email? What do you think? What are some of the things you think?
Their preferred method?
That's the number one way.
Which way?
Whatever way they want. The number one way to communicate with your clients is whichever way they prefer. It's not about you. It's about them. Right? That's it. Because here's what I tell people all the time. Look, if you get mad at me and you want to say something to me, but you're nervous about saying it, send it in an email. Because one, it'd be great. You get it off your chest. You get to tell me how you really feel about me. And two, I'll never read it. Okay? So, like, if you get mad at me, email me. Works out great for both of us. How do you know how people want to communicate? Ask them. Hey, what's the best way to get you? Shoot me a text. You got it. Now you're texting that person. Hey, what's the best way to get you? You know what? I just prefer a phone call. I have a flip phone. Okay, cool. Call them. But you gotta ask. That's how you win. Know your clients. All right? Now, supervised property management activities. All right? Per section 35287 of the regulations, any real estate licensee involved in property management activities must be directly supervised and controlled by the employing broker. So if you wanna do property management, you gotta make sure your brokerage allows it. Qualified association, what does that mean? Act 14 of 2009 allows real estate licensees who work for the same broker to form qualified associations for the purpose of receiving compensation from the broker. That's not super popular. Cemetery brokers, what does that look like? A cemetery broker is an individual or entity who engages in the business in the capacity of a broker exclusively within the limited field of business that applies to cemetery lots, plots, mausoleum spaces, or openings. Because yes, a cemetery plot is real estate. You can own it, right? So you can be a cemetery broker, and that's what you sell. If you can be a cemetery broker, you can also be a cemetery associate broker, which is an individual cemetery broker who is employed by another cemetery broker. What about a cemetery salesperson? Same as a regular salesperson, just to cemetery lots. Believe it or not, people do really well in that field. Terrible joke alert. Why is that? People are dying to get in there. Oh, hey, all right. Thank you for that. Yeah, appreciate that. Now, you have the builder-owner salesperson. Although Pennsylvania does not require builders to be licensed in Pennsylvania, some individuals employed by builders of single or multifamily dwellings must be licensed. All right? There is one local company that hires real estate salespeople as W-2 employees. They're right here in the Hazleton area. All right, they also sell down in the Lehigh Valley. So I do have a friend who's a realtor who's not an independent contractor. Pretty rare around here. All right. Rental listing referral agent is an individual or entity who owns or manages a business that collects rental information for the purpose of referring prospective tenants to rental units. Not really big around here. Campground membership salespeople. All right, so what does that look like? It's someone who's employed as an employee or an independent contractor under the supervision of a broker, campground memberships or interests that give the purchaser the right to use a unit of real property for the purpose of locating an RV, trailer, tent trailer, pickup camper, and the like. Timeshare salespeople, they are also licensed agents. All right. A timeshare salesperson must be 18, complete 30 hours of instruction in specific topics, and complete not less than 30 days of on-site training. If you're going to sell a timeshare, sell it at Disney. It's the number one timeshare sales company in the world. Now, unlicensed activities, oh boy. Guaranteed test question in the margin. Maximum penalty for engaging in unlicensed activities. I want you to think about how crazy this is. First offense, a fine up to $500 and or imprisonment not to exceed 3 months. Whoa. Second or subsequent offenses, a fine of $2,000 to $5,000 and imprisonment of 1 to 2 years. Now look, full disclosure, I've never been to jail. But I would assume if you have to go to jail, this is not why you want to be there. All right, it's probably an uncomfortable conversation for you if, you know, you're next to, like, I don't know, some gang and they're like, what are you here for? And they're like, murder, racketeering. How about you? Unlicensed real estate activity. It's a bad look, you know, it's a bad look. You don't want to have that conversation with, you know, the Sons of Anarchy, right? Like, stay out of that deal, all right? So you do have to know what the fines are for unlicensed activities. Licensing procedures. The Department of State issues licenses and registration certificates to individuals who meet the requirements established by the Act, so your state license will come directly from the Department of State. The license period, we talked about this, last paragraph there, the license period for all real estate licenses begins June 1st and ends the last day of May in each even-numbered year. All right? Now, that means you have to renew your license. What does that look like? Before the end of each license period, the commission establishes procedures for submitting documentation and fees to renew a license. Licensees are notified by mail that their license must be renewed and are provided renewal instructions approximately 90 days prior to the expiration of the license. Now we renew our license on a system called PALS. So when you get your license, it'll ask you for a PALS. You'll create an account with a login and a password. Write it down somewhere because you'll forget it, but you need it for the rest of your life as a realtor. All right, so we'll always be renewing licenses. In order to renew your license, you have to do continuing education on the top of 193. Licensed brokers and salespersons are required to satisfy a 14-hour continuing education requirement during each two-year period in order to renew their license. Now, it's a little bit different when you get your license. Second paragraph. All new salespersons must complete the mandated 7-hour general module and an additional 7-hour module of either residential or commercial. After brokers and salespersons have renewed one time, they may choose any electives that total at least 14 hours. Note that the Real Estate Commission may mandate certain hours be in specific areas of study. In 2018, the Commission required 3 hours of Pennsylvania rules and regulations. In 2018, they ruled that they must complete 1.5 hours of property management and 2 hours of licensing. I'm sorry, advertising. So they can mandate certain courses. We do all continuing education courses here at the Downtown Real Estate Academy. So when you get your license, the first thing you have to do will be 7 hours general module, and then either 7 hours residential or commercial. If you sell residential, do the residential. If you sell commercial, do the commercial. I mean, should be easy, but you'd be surprised. And then after that, it's 14 hours of whatever you choose, unless the state mandates certain classes, which it seems like they always do. All right, so you have to be prepared for that. What about an inactive license? Hopefully this won't happen to you, but in case it does. A license becomes inactive when an individual voluntarily relinquishes a license, sometimes referred to as putting the license in escrow. So that could get confusing. There's an escrow account where you hold earnest money deposits, but if you decide to step back from real estate, you can send your license back to the state, which is also known as putting your license in escrow. So it can get confusing. When a license is inactive, the person is prohibited from performing the activities for which a license was issued. A license may be reactivated by submitting the proper forms and required fees within 5 years of the date the license became inactive. So if you get your real estate license and you put it in escrow, January 1st of 2025, within 5 years, you can reactivate it. Now you have to follow, if you need continuing education, you have to do that. And there's fees to pay to reactivate it, but you can do it. So after 5 years, you have to start all over again. Sometimes, I want to talk about this just briefly. Sometimes you might get your license and it's not the right time. Sometimes it's okay to put your license in escrow, get yourself into a better spot, and then take it out. So I hired a guy a couple years ago, young guy, got his license, hired him. He was on board with us for, I think, 8 months, didn't sell a house. Came to me and he goes, look, it's a little too much for me right now. I got a lot going on in my personal life. I'm gonna put my license in escrow. But he goes, but I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna get my life on track. I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna sell houses again. I said, all right, when you're ready, you let me know. So he put his license in escrow. And about 10 months later, he reactivated it. And right now, he's in the top 25% of agents in my company. Excellent success story. Sometimes it's not the right time. That's okay. Now, if you put it in escrow, the day you escrow it, that clock starts ticking. You have 5 years to pull it back out, and then you have to do your continuing education, whatever you need, and then reactivate your license. I think I'm in the process of doing that again for someone else whose license was in escrow is going to be coming back into the business, probably within the next week or two, I think. So sometimes it's just not the right time, all right? So it's okay if you want to put it into escrow. Now, out-of-state licenses and license reciprocity, you could do some research on that if you want. I'm not going to get too bogged down into that. Some states do have reciprocity with Pennsylvania. I mean, you know, I hear it all the time. People say, I'm going to get my real estate license in Pennsylvania. I'm going to get it in these other states. I mean, like, okay. Can you do it? Sure. Do some people do it, and are they successful with it? Absolutely. I don't like selling houses in areas that I'm not super familiar with, right? Like if somebody called me today and said, hey, I want to buy a house in, you know, Altoona, I'd probably refer them out. Now, my license is in Pennsylvania. I could very easily go there. But if they ask me a question, hey, what about this neighborhood? I have no idea. What about this school district? I'm not sure. I don't love working like that. In my opinion, as a realtor, people are coming to you for expertise, right? So if people say, hey, I want to live in an area that, you know, has a low crime rate, that has good schools, that has access to public transportation, I want, like, I feel like you should kind of know the area that you're selling in. Just my opinion. It's a state license. You can sell the entire state of Pennsylvania. If someone called me tomorrow and said, I want to buy a house in Erie, I would say, great, I'm going to find an agent there who's going to do a better job than me. Just how I do it. Now, why do I say that? Well, because there's reciprocity. Could you get your license in another state? Sure you can. One, do you want to sell there? Two, do you have the ability to do it? And maybe you do. By all means, go get them. But, you know, just to have a license someplace else, personally, I don't love it. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I just feel, as a realtor, as a broker, people are coming to you for your insights and your knowledge. So if you're selling something that you're not knowledgeable about, I think there's potential there to actually hurt your clients, which is the opposite of what you should be trying to do. Does that make sense? So I don't get too deep into the reciprocity thing. Now, operation of the real estate business. Section 601 of RELRA requires each resident, licensed broker, cemetery broker, real estate listing, referral agent to maintain a fixed office, the address of which shall be included on all applicable licenses. And the regulations require that the office be devoted to the transaction of the real estate business and be arranged to permit business to be conducted in privacy. If the office is located in a private residence, the entrance to the office shall be separate from the entrance of the residence. So one of the big requirements, if you open up a real estate office, you have to have some place where you can conduct business in private. What does that mean? Behind closed doors usually, right? All right, you have to have that. You can have a real estate office in your house. You can do that. But it has to have a separate entrance from the main entrance. All right? And you have to live in a neighborhood that zoning would allow you to do that. All right? Business name. The business name is the name under which a broker, cemetery broker, or rental listing referral agent license is issued. The business name becomes the name under which business is conducted. The name designated on the license must be displayed prominently and in a permanent fashion outside of all offices. So when you go to a real estate office, it has to have a sign on the door that says what it is. It has to be a permanent sign. What's a permanent sign? something that looks permanent. All right, it's like, you know, different things for different people. And then branch offices. If a broker or cemetery broker intends to maintain more than one place of business, the licensee must obtain an additional license for each office location. A branch office license, including its address, must be obtained before any office is opened. The license is issued in the same name under which the broker or cemetery broker is licensed to conduct business at the main office. Last one before our last break. It'll be a quick break and then we'll get out of here. Change of address or change of employment. Section 603 of RELRA states that no associate broker or other underlying licensee may be employed by any broker other than the broker designated on the license. Section 604 prohibits any licensee from receiving compensation from anyone other than the employing broker. That is massively important to know. The only person that can pay you is the employing broker. A broker is permitted to pay a commission, fee, or other valuable consideration only to licensees employed by the broker, another licensed or real estate broker in cooperating transactions, and a principal in a real estate transaction as long as a written disclosure is provided to all principals. When a licensee changes employment from one broker to another, the licensee may notify the commission no later than 10 days after the intended date of change, return of the current license, and pay the required fee. So you can switch offices. You just have to send your old license back and apply for a new license. I think to transfer a real estate salesperson's license is $20. Not the biggest investment you'll ever make in your life.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode, everybody. If you want to hear more content, follow us at Real Estate Right Now Pod on YouTube. Once you're there, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. And if you want to follow me directly, check me out. It's Dave Wychok at Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, all the socials that you're already using.